How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Lakers, your daily podcast on the Los Angeles Lakers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And we're live. Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast, live edition. The Lakers just finished playing tonight. They played the Denver Nuggets. They beat them with a final score. Man, I have it pulled up. I honestly prepared. There we go. They've beat them with the final score of 124 to 115. They pull away there at the end, which is the opposite of what happened the last time the two teams played when Luke Walton kept the bench warmers, for lack of a better term, in there to let the game get away from them. Earlier in the week, they go back to a couple of the starters. The Lakers pull away down the stretch and look impressive doing so. Now that said, you know, Wilson Chandler did not play. I'm looking at the box score here. Wilson Chandler did not play. Nikola Jokic did not play. Gary Harris did not play. Mike Miller didn't play, but that, I mean, he's really old. So the Nuggets wind up not playing a couple of their key players tonight, but the guys that the Lakers did play looked pretty impressive, and I'm just going to go ahead and jump right into it. Now, before I do that, this audio is going to be downloaded and then uploaded to our iTunes feed and our podcast feed, which you can find on Audio Boom, iTunes, Silver Screen and Roll, TuneIn, Stitcher, and Today's Fast Break. Make sure you guys are using the promo code LOLakers on SeatGeek to get your $20 rebate. Now let's go ahead and talk about the game. D'Angelo Russell. he continues to look more and more impressive. Now, there has been some criticism, which I don't quite grasp. I don't quite understand what's kind of going on there. there's a lot of people saying that he is not the prototypical point guard, or he is not the true point guard. I don't quite get that. When I think true point guard, I think guys who literally can't do anything else on the court other than, you know, pass and look gritty. And you can go ahead and take that for what you think it might mean. Look, D'Angelo Russell is a highly talented individual. He is a great scorer. He's worked on his shot. He can score pretty much whenever he wants against a lot of the guys who are going to be guarding him. And dissuading him from doing so seems like a highly counterproductive way to analyze this team. And tonight, Russell finishes with 33 points on 19 shots. So, you know, for those who were going to say, well, he didn't pass enough, he didn't do this, he didn't do that, down the stretch of the game, he did. He did feed Lou Williams, and I'll get to Lou here in a second. But from what I'm watching from D'Angelo Russell, and the stats are right here in front of me, Sportsnet Live is going to be talking about and interviewing guys. So I'll bring some quotes to you guys as I can. But I've never understood the criticism of, you know, so-and-so isn't a true point guard, because in my opinion, it's about bringing as much talent to the floor as you possibly can. And in this case, with Russell being as good as he can be, telling him, no, you aren't allowed to score because your job is to get other people involved, doesn't make very much sense. You know, it's kind of dumb it's really lazy analysis, in my opinion. And you know, to be fair, in regards to the analysis that's going on there, it goes against kind of the old school way of thinking, where, you know, in prior eras, you had point guards and their job was to get the offense going or get other guys going and try to figure it out from there. But for right now, let the players out there do what they're best at. And for Russell, as of right now, he seems most comfortable scoring. And until he really figures out how to do both, get himself involved in the game and get other guys involved in the game, critiquing him for not being able to do the latter just, again, doesn't make very much sense. So, again, Russell finishes the game with 33 points. He finishes with 3 assists, 3 steals, which is interesting. He was very active on that end of the court. And only 2 turnovers, which, you know, heading into tonight's game and as we go along in the season, the hope is that he cuts down on those turnovers. And if he averages 2 turnovers a game, I would be more than happy with how he handled for a second. There we go. I am back. The other guy who I was impressed with tonight, and Musa Al Chocolat says that Nick Young did a good job. I'm going to get to him here in a second. But the other guy who jumped off the court tonight was Lou Williams, and he kind of sort of needed to do so because, as Musa points out, Nick Young has been kind of biting at his heels tonight or over the last couple games. And with Lou Williams, I think he's kind of trying to figure out what it takes to be successful in that starting unit. A lot more catch and shoot, a lot less hesitation when he is in that kind of situation. And tonight he was very efficient. He finishes tonight. He played 29 minutes, which is kind of interesting. He finishes tonight with 25 points on 15 shots, the typical Lou Williams stat line. 4 of 7 from 3, just like D'Angelo Russell, and 5 of 5 from the free throw line. So, for everything that you can possibly say about Lou Williams, especially when you consider he is kind of a chucker, you cannot call him inefficient. He is, you know, 25 points on 15 shots is I'll take that every day of the week and twice on Sunday. Unfortunately, the Lakers did not play 2 games tonight, but For what the Lakers are hoping for him, especially if they're hoping to groom Jordan Clarkson into more of this bench role, which is kind of interesting. I'll talk about that in a second, too. But for Lou Williams, when you're looking at what he brings to the table, it's pretty much scoring. And if he's going to start games and go up against, you know, starting shooting guards, the hope is that he can bring more offensively than the Lakers lose defensively while he's on the court. So as of right now, if he plays like he does tonight, and I don't think, you know, as the season goes along, I don't think he's going to play 29 minutes with Jordan Clarkson only playing 19. I don't think that's going to happen very often. But, you know, for what we saw tonight, I think the Lakers take that kind of effort. I don't think, again, he'll play as many minutes, or I don't think he'll take 15 shots in every single game from now on. But if he takes half as many shots, you know, if he takes 7 or 8 shots or 9 shots and he makes 5 of those and then gets to the free throw line 3 or 4 times, makes a couple threes, and just kind of primers, you know, the you know, just fills in the gap scoring wise in that starting 5, and then gets Jordan Clarkson ready to run point and create in that second unit, then that's a solid role for Lou. The flip side to that, though, is that I don't know if he's going to play much better than he did tonight. And if he doesn't, and we continue to see Clarkson play or come off of the bench, I don't know if that necessarily makes sense in terms of, you know, what the Lakers have talent-wise as we go along. Until the Lakers improve, you know, if they're able to sign Jordan or JJ Redick in the offseason or acquire some better shooting guard, I'd still like to see Jordan Clarkson start, especially with somebody like Jose Calderon leading the second unit as efficiently as he has. The Other thing that I was going to talk about before I get to some questions here in a second was just the minutes and how they were doled out. You saw, you know, Julius Randle plays 28 minutes. Nick Young plays 32 minutes. Mozgov only plays 14. That's not going to happen very often. Russell plays 32. Williams plays 29. Larry Nance Jr. plays 17. Brandon Ingram plays 19. Clarkson only plays 19. But for the most part, and then you have guys like, you know, Zach August doesn't play. Eji Onleon doesn't play. Metal World Peace doesn't play. Luol Deng was hurt. So that's going to return the rotation to normalcy to a certain extent. But Anthony Brown doesn't play. Travis Ware doesn't play. Marcelo Huertas doesn't play. Julian Jacobs doesn't play. So you see a rotation that kind of looks a lot more like we're going to see during the regular season, hopefully with the addition of Luol Deng in there somewhere. And, I mean, it seems to make some sense. I'd like to swap Lou Williams' minutes with Jordan Clarkson's minutes, but Jose Calderon has been the better guard between him and Marcelo Huertas. So if you're Huertas, probably not feeling great about how the postseason or preseason has gone thus far. Thomas Robinson comes in there again tonight and kind of wreaks havoc when he was in there. Now, plus minus isn't a perfect stat, but in the 9 minutes that he was in there, he had a plus 13, Thomas Robinson did. And when you look at what, you know, he brings to the table compared to what he brings to the table, which tonight wasn't anything because he didn't play, you're kind of thinking to yourself, you know, I kind of like the hustle that Robinson brings to the... Whoop, there's a moth trying to kill me. But you like the hustle that Robinson brings to the table. He's kind of an extension to Tarik Black. And thus far, Tarik Black has been highly successful. So if you're the Lakers, you're kind of thinking, hey, you know, if we can have a couple Tarik Blacks in the rotation, we kind of make that work. And when we need the shooting in there, then you just kind of, you play Deng at the four, or you play, different guys at the four spot to be able to spread the floor whenever Robinson or Black are in there, and you make that work. And if you're E, and, you know, I don't think he's necessarily too worried because they wouldn't have brought him into training camp or signed him to the contract they did if there wasn't a pseudo guarantee of him making the team. But as of right now, you're kind of saying like, this isn't great. This isn't a great spot to be in. So the minutes tonight were interesting. They were thrown off a little bit by Luol Deng not playing, but and Clarkson playing so few minutes and Mozgov playing so few minutes. But I think as we're going along in this preseason, Luke is starting to see the kind of rotations and lineups that he likes to, you know, that he I think will go to throughout the season. So if you're a part of those lineups right now, that's definitely something that you're really excited about. Lastly, and this will be the last kind of note before I get to some of your guys' questions, Nick Young plays 32 minutes tonight, and that's after not playing any minutes at all in the very first, you know, in the first game that I sat down with everybody here on Facebook Live on Silver Screen and Roll. And, you know, that if you, you know, he does offer some things, right? He played pretty dang well defensively tonight and in the previous game against the Nuggets, which you think Nick Young, you don't necessarily you think defense. So anything that he brings on that side of the court is kind of nice to see. And then on top of that, you're starting to see some of the things that he was successful with Mike D'Antoni with, right? It was very few possessions of complete ISO. It was a lot more, you know, catch and shoot for Nick Young in space, which I think is where he's going to thrive a lot more than we saw him over the last couple of seasons with the last coach. So it's nice to see that. And if you're the Lakers, you're trying to get whatever you can possibly get from somebody who a lot of people, myself included, did not think was going to provide, you know, or produce very much. So the Lakers, it appears, is trying to get whatever they can from him. And, you know, it's nice that they return to the role that he signed, you know, that earned him this 4-year contract in the first place. And what's funny is right now, Sportsnet, Spectrum Sportsnet Live is talking to him right now. I have it muted, but you know, that's the conversation. 32 minutes for Nick Young tonight. He scores 14 points on 5 of 8 shooting, 2 of 5 from 3, 2 of 2 from the free throw line, with a plus 6 at the end of the night. So, you know, look, I'm not his biggest fan, as most people have figured out, but if the Lakers can't get some kind of value from him, either in terms of production on the court, or if they can turn that production on the court into something at the deadline, I'm all for that. Or before the deadline, the trade deadline, I'm all for that. So I don't think, obviously, he's going to play as many minutes as he played tonight. I think we'll see him closer to the 10-minute mark. But as of right now, that's about as well as you're going to see Nick Young play all season. So let's go ahead and get to a couple of your questions or Tim, some of your comments before we move on here tonight. Maurice Mallory says, you think Lou is more suited for a six-man role? I think so, because of his defense, or lack thereof. And that's why he's been, you know, the sixth man of the year in previous teams, and in most of the roles that he's played in, he was definitely more of a sixth man, because he's a liability defensively. He's not very big. His instincts aren't very good. And unless he's just playing lights out offensively, he just doesn't make very much sense on very many starting lineups. So I expect that as the year goes along, you know, we'll see somebody else in that starting lineup. But if not, look, this is what's cool. I trust Luke Walton. I trust him to make the right decision here. And if he thinks he sees something, or if the numbers are telling him something that I'm just not seeing right now, and Lou makes more sense for him, I trust him as of right now. I give him the benefit of the doubt. Nathan Altick, positionless basketball. Welcome to the new age for people who claim Russell isn't a pure point. I completely agree. Let these guys shine in whatever roles they have to. And for D'Angelo Russell, he's definitely more comfortable at this stage in his career scoring than getting everybody else involved. And as he matures and as he gets a better feel for the system, he will continue to get everybody else involved. But as of right now, let him do whatever he feels the most comfortable with. The Lakers aren't going to win. You know, they aren't vying for a playoff spot, so let everybody mature at their own rates right now. Adam Christie, Russell scoring will open up other shots for others. Even, you know, another great point. As teams, the guy that I'm actually going to talk to later tonight in his podcast, and then you guys will be able to hear it on our own podcast, Adam Morris, is a huge proponent of gravity on the court. And if Russell is out there making three-pointers at the rate he's able to make them, or he's been able to make them so far, that opens up everybody else on the court. See Curry, Steph, the Warriors have enjoyed some success with that equation so far. Let's go ahead and get to another couple comments. Maurice, again, I hope Ingram can get out of his shooting woes. He's a rookie. The game comes really quickly to those guys. Life comes at you fast. That's a favorite phrase of mine on Twitter. So that's kind of what I think is happening right now with Brandon Ingram. Sonny agrees. Lou starting will cause a huge detriment to the defense. I agree. Do I think Ingram is worth it? I don't know necessarily what Ingram might be worth. I don't know if you're asking if he was worth the number 2 overall pick. I think he was. You're talking about a kid who is 19, 20 years old right now. I think he turned 20 before the season started or whatever. He is still growing, crazily enough. He's 6'10", 6'11". He's still growing. He has a great handle. He moves really well out there on the court. He knows how to utilize his length defensively. Just be patient, Laker fans. Just be patient. We saw this already. We should have been practiced already at this, right? Where we saw Russell kind of stumble out of the starting gates last year and the starting blocks last year, and then kind of pick it up as the season went along, and then we're watching him enjoy the success he's enjoyed so far this preseason. Let's give Ingram the time, the space, the patience to be able to do the same thing. Luke for Coach of the Year, if he can make Nick play like Nick did under Mike D'Antoni. I think that's kind of sort of a backhanded compliment for Mike D'Antoni. Careful there. A lot of people don't necessarily love that. All right, last couple comments. Thank you, Francis, saying that I'm the man. I'm so much better at this than Harrison. Don't tell him I said that, though. Adam Christie says, Was Young's 32 minutes an audition for Walton as a minor trade? I don't think, or as a minor trade. I think it's more the latter than the former, meaning that I don't necessarily think that, you know, Young is going to be in the rotation like we saw him tonight. Again, Lou Alding did not play. He banged up his knee. So when Lou Alding comes back and he plays, you know, his 25 minutes or so per game, those 32 minutes that we saw Nick Young play tonight are kind of going to dwindle. Look, if the Lakers can get anything for Young at this point, Mitch deserves to be the next president of the United States. And then finally, Marie says, thanks, man. Shout out from Singapore. Go Lakers. Look, I pardon the self-indulgence here, but I cannot, Harrison and I, Silver Screen and Roll, you know, the entire staff over at Silver Screen and Roll, all the people that are in the Locked On Podcast Network, we cannot thank you guys enough for the support that we've gotten. And when I hear people, you know, fans from Singapore, I it's crazy to me. I appreciate everybody for tuning in tonight, and we are going to we're either going to be on Facebook Live after every Laker game that we can possibly be live on, or we're going to figure out this YouTube Live so that Harrison and I can have more of a back and forth. Nobody wants to hear me talk for 20, 25 straight minutes. So as of right now, thanks everybody for tuning in. If you missed anything, this is going to be on our podcast feed, and I'm actually about to jump on a podcast with Adam Morris. We're going to add that audio into tonight's show, which will air tomorrow on iTunes on Audio Boom, and then be distributed by Silver Screen and Roll, TuneIn, Stitcher, and Today's Fast Break. And then again, make sure you guys are using the promo code LOLakers on SeatGeek to get your $20 rebate on your first purchase. And hey, thanks, Adam. I appreciate the shout-out for my hat. Dodgers, get your stuff together when you get here to Los Angeles tomorrow. And we will talk to everybody again Tuesday. Have a good one, everybody.
The Nuggets just played the Lakers two times in a row. So you watched the Nuggets play twice this week, which is probably more than anyone outside of Denver. So I wanted to get an outsider's opinion on the games, and but more importantly on the players, the young players in particular, Emmanuel Mudiay, Jamal Murray, Yusef Nurkic. Those are the guys that I think Nuggets fans have their eyes on most closely right now. And then to return the favor, I would provide some insight or perspective, rather, on your guys' youngsters. So, that sound like a plan?
No, definitely. Do you want to alternate back and forth? So, like, I do one, you do one.
I'm gonna throw some softballs your way, and I'm gonna see how hot you can make these takes about the players. So I'll start with obviously the most interesting one. Emmanuel Mudiay and D'Angelo Russell are kind of linked together just because they were the first two point guards taken in last year's draft. Moody, I think, was ranked higher as a prospect out of high school, and then obviously D'Angelo went ahead. They went at each other a little bit over the last two games. D'Angelo obviously kind of destroyed him. Not even kind of destroyed him. He absolutely destroyed him over these two games. What did you take away from that matchup? First of all, do you think D'Angelo Russell, like, do you think that's a rivalry for him? Do you think he feels as linked to that as I think Mudiay does to him?
No, I definitely do. He's the kind of guy who takes those things into account. Like, I think he took personal delight in that he was, you know, because Mudiay, like you said, was, I think he was the top prospect coming out of high school, right?
Right.
And then he went, he played in China and then came back over here, and because he wasn't seen as much while he was there in China, his draft stock kind of plummeted a little bit.
Well, and he was injured in China, so he actually missed most of the season. So it's kind of like he sat out a year.
Right, and so I think for Russell, because they competed against each other, you know, all through high school, and then, you know, Russell's hearing all these things about Mudiay, and then, you know, like you said, he kind of leapfrogged him, and I think he legitimately loved that he was able to leapfrog Mudiay. And I don't know if it's necessarily fair that he did so. Like you said, Moutier dealt with health stuff. And I just don't think, you know, guys going overseas to play basketball, those coaches aren't necessarily as invested in improving guys' draft stock as college coaches are, because in college, if you don't improve guys' draft stock, nobody's going to go to your college. Whereas if you're playing overseas, then, you know, it's more like, well, what can actually get me wins out here in this league that I'm coaching in? So right. I don't know if it was necessarily fair to compare those guys on draft night, but that's kind of how it turns out. They're both point guards. They were both taken in the lottery, and they love playing against each other. We saw it in the summer league. You know, even
right.
that very first year, and then as the years have kind of gone along, they just love playing against each other, and it's really kind of cool because their games are so different than each other's that it's kind of a fun matchup. And over the last couple of games, I think obviously Russell got the better end of that, but it wouldn't shock me at all over the next couple of games in the regular season to see those things, you know, to see those roles reversed.
And that's kind of that's an important point. It's so funny because you go all of August without any basketball. You go most of September without any basketball. And we're all like jonesing for basketball talk and analysis and stuff. So a preseason game feels like it's significant when really nobody remembers who scored points in the preseason last year. Like, it doesn't matter. So as much as, like you said, D'Angelo really, really looked like twice the player as Moutier was, I think, over the two games. I wouldn't be surprised if those things flipped in the regular season again. So, yeah. But you brought up an interesting point in that the two players are so opposite of each other in so many ways, because Moutier is kind of explosive, physical, you know, not a shooter, but kind of gets to the rim. And then D'Angelo is such a smooth player, almost nonchalant. Like he's on the court, almost looks like he's not trying very hard, but he is. It's just that he just plays at such a smooth pace and never seems like he's overexerting energy. So it is kind of an interesting style fight. But what did you see from Moutier the last two games? You know, kind of break down his game from your perspective.
I'm biased in this respect because I used to be a shooting coach, so I would almost say that I almost overvalue shooting, but his shot is really worrisome to me, and that's kind of what jumps off the court to me. Now his athleticism is more than enough to make up for it. He's really long. I like his dribbling style, you know, for the most part. He defends the ball very well in terms of keeping the defender away from it and stuff. But when he was open tonight, he was wide open today. There was nobody within, I would say, 7 feet of him, 10 feet of him even. And he went to, you know, rise up, and as he was shooting, I kind of chuckled. I found myself chuckling. And I'm, you know, I really, you know, I apologize for it. I don't want to come off as, you know, offensive when I say that, but...
Oh, you can be a troll. Go ahead and put your troll hat on. It's all right, Anthony. We all know.
I feel bad for the guy because, like, the guy that he reminds me of, but more explosive, is Rondo, where he's so long, and he's... And Rondo, at his peak, was you know, kind of, you didn't quite understand how athletic he was until he, you know, he really decided, all right, I'm going to get out in this transition. I'm going to elevate, get to the basket or whatever. Moutier's a lot more explosive, but when I used to watch Rondo shoot in those, especially in the 7-game series that the Lakers played, where Phil basically put Kobe on Rondo and said, if you're anywhere within 7 feet of Rondo, you're working way too hard defensively. And I watched Moutier play, and, you know, if I was coaching against him, I would say, look, the only way he's going to beat you is if he gets by you, if he gets into the key, if he's able to break down your defense and then kick it out to an actual shooter. And if you let him do that, that's not just a physical breakdown, that's a mental breakdown. You shouldn't allow that to happen. And when I saw him shoot that shot tonight, I just said to myself, yeah, unless he fixes that, I don't know if he's necessarily going to be a legitimate night-in, night-out threat to any team.
Yeah, and you see that with just the pick-and-roll coverage. D'Angelo went over under every single screen today, every high pick-and-roll. And, I mean, Moutier would even receive screens inside the three-point line. You know, at the top of the key, where almost always it's like a foot or two outside the three-point line, he'd get them inside, and D'Angelo would still go under him. Mm-hmm. So So yeah, that speaks to that. But I will say, you know, Moutier shot 21% in November from behind the arc last year, 20% in December, 33% in January, 28% in February, 39% in March, and 36% in April. So the numbers kind of improved as the months went on. I mean, it was much better towards the end of the year. And I do think just mechanically, I think he worked on his shot and made some progress there. But it's obviously I don't think he's ever going to be a 40% three-point shooter. If he can just get up to like the 36 area consistently or 35 even, I think that would probably be enough. But as you could see, you know, he's not there right now by any means.
The thing that I kind of noticed with Moutier is when he's shooting, you want to shoot through the basketball, right? Like that. Ideally, you shoot your shooting stroke goes directly through the basketball, and I kind of see he's right-handed, and I see his right hand kind of slip to the left of the ball, to where his right wrist is kind of cockeyed a little bit, and it creates kind of this weird backspin that isn't full on, you know, Joakim Noah tornado style, but it's that kind of awkward spin isn't going to create, you know, true bounces on the rim. And yeah, I mean, if the, you know, as you said, the percentage is improved, but in order to be consistent, you can't trust, you know, unless he's, you know, aiming for the left side of the rim all the time so that the ball can kind of spin back into the rim off of the bounce. It just doesn't make, you know, it doesn't lead me to believe that he's going to be very successful consistently shooting like that.
Yeah, he definitely has a lot of work to do and a long way to go. I thought tonight he really pushed the ball in transition really well. I thought his best possessions were the ones where he got out in the open court. He looked like he's in better shape than he was last year. He had a handful of like really loud turnovers, meaning like just really, really, really bad ones, unforced turnovers. Mm-hmm. But throwing those out, and I don't know if you can just chalk those up to like unlucky or what, because he has them so frequently. But if you just throw those out, I thought in the open court and early in transition, he was really, really good tonight. And that's kind of the silver lining, I guess, to his game. The one thing I'll say about him is that I don't think Malone's doing him any favors with some of the lineups that they're experimenting with in this preseason. They're playing Nurkic and Jokic together in the first game. They played Nurkic and Kenneth Faried to start the game tonight. That's always going to clog the paint when you have two bigs like that, especially the way they're playing him. And I think Moutier's best when he's surrounded by as many shooters as possible and gets to run high pick and roll. So I'm very curious to see if Malone's going to use him with, say, maybe Kenneth Faried at center or Jokic at center, but Wilson Chandler at the four, because I think those will be his most productive lineups.
Oh, I completely agree. I mean, Wilson Chandler didn't play tonight, right? So that's gonna tweak some of the lineups anyway. But yeah, I'd like to see him out there with either Gallo or Wilson Chandler at the four, and then, you know, if you're going to play Nurkic, then you're hoping the only thing he's going to be on the court for is to set screens and roll hard to the basket. But other than that, you know, I much prefer Jokic there, because you're expanding the lane for everybody. And that's kind of what the Lakers have focused on when Mozgov hasn't been on the court, is if they have like Tarik Black on the court, his only job is to set screens and roll really, really hard. But other than that, he spends almost no time, you know, posting up or actually clogging the lane, so that you have as much space as possible for D'Angelo Russell or Jordan Clarkson or Jose Calderon, who's gotten some productive minutes at backup point guard. It's so fun. I sent this tweet tonight, and I kind of felt bad, because I do like Marcel Huertas, and if Kirk is listening to us, if Kirk Serious Face is listening to us from Mavs Moneyball, he's like personal friends with Huertas. I like the guy, but Calderon is so much better than he is. And
that's funny.
I almost like felt bad. I was watching tonight, and the Lakers were linked to Calderon basically throughout Pau Gasol's tenure out here, and watching him and the way he's been able to manage the second units with the Lakers really made me think, like, man, that would have been really fun to have him as a point guard with Pau out here. That would have been great.
Calderon is first team all looks like a scrub. like guys that if you just saw on the street, you'd be like, that's not a basketball player.
Right.
I mean, he looks like he's 45 yeah. and skinny. And he looks like a
he looks like he smoked a pack
science.
Of marbles before every game.
Yeah.
Like
he's... Yeah. That's just the European look with like the 5 o'clock shadow.
Yeah.
And, yeah, but no, but he looks like a science teacher from middle school or something. But
yeah.
Let's move on to D'Angelo because I mean he's the talk of the weekend, I would say, not just in the series, but I think in the NBA because I think the Nuggets helped him out a little bit, both with some of their pick and roll coverage, which we'll get into. But he looked like, I mean, he looked like he's ready to take a giant leap this year.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
I think part of that giant leap is going to be perceived because there's this narrative about him in his rookie year that he wasn't that good, and I don't agree with it at all. And I'm biased. I will completely admit to being biased about Russell. But because of the whole, you know, Nick Young Snapchat fiasco and the stupidity,
which is a big deal though. Let's not. I don't think you should brush that to the side because I'm all about the X's and O's of basketball and breaking things down from that perspective. But that the Snapchat thing and just the way he handled it, at least publicly, I thought was very. It was just very immature. And when something like that happens, you kind of worry like, well, what else, you know, how is he going to handle just growing in the NBA? So I don't, as much as it can be overblown, I still think it's an important thing.
Well, all right. So I don't know if it's a semantic argument that we're having here, but in terms of the actual act, it was highly immature. You know, recording somebody without their knowing is about as immature. And by the way, you're recording this, right, Adam? We know this.
Yes.
But that act in and of itself was highly immature, and you know the argument that I made was, you know, maybe Nick Young shouldn't cheat on his fiance, but of course. But you know, in terms of D'Angelo Russell's actual actions in and of himself, that was not the right thing to do, and that's not a hot take at all. But after, you know, recording him and. In the, you know, in the fallout of all of those actions, you know, he did go publicly and he said, it was stupid of me to record him. And he apologized profusely. And all, you know, there was no point
what about the Popovich thing though? Right. Cause Popovich just had some comments about how difficult he was to handle. Is that right?
Oh, I didn't see those.
Was it Popovich or was it somebody else?
Man, I've definitely heard. I mean, while we were out there in Summer League while we were out there in Vegas, like we heard quite a few people that we trust saying that there were rumors of that. But like conversely, and look, John Ireland, you know, is gets some of his paychecks from the Lakers. But we had John Ireland on Locked On Lakers recently, and he said that he didn't see any of that. You know, so. Mm-hmm. It depends on who you're talking to. I've heard it from enough people that you and I both trust that there was some stuff going on behind the scenes. But then conversely, he was 19 years old. Like, I was a humongous prick when I was 19. Like, I'm still terrible to deal with. I'm still highly immature.
Right.
But with Russell, I think a lot of it can kind of been chalked up to just standard teenage immaturity. But when you look at, like, Byron Scott took, you know, Nick Young's side in this stuff, and Nick Young was a guy who cheated on his fiance. Lou Williams, it was reported, got up from a breakfast table that D'Angelo Russell sat down at, you know, like mean, like a scene from Mean
right,
Girls.
Right.
You know?
Like, the Lakers were hilarious last year. They really were.
It was the best show on TV. And, you know, from everybody who handled that situation, I thought Russell, when he stood up and he said, look, man, I'm really, really sorry. And he apologized from, you know, from dusk to dawn about, you know, the stuff he pulled. And yes, it's highly possible that he was really hard to deal with. But I also notice how guys, you know, react to the stuff he does on the court. When he made the game winner against Philadelphia out there in Summer League, the guys were almost, you know, put him up on their shoulders. It was really cool. Now it was kind of weird when he kind of walked away from everybody, but he seems to get everybody behind him to a certain extent. And tonight when he's out there doing the stuff that he did, and I guess we can kind of get back to the basketball side of this, when he's out there doing the stuff that he does, the Lakers really seem to go as he goes. In the first game, that the, you know, earlier this week, was it Friday that they played? I think it was Friday, right? Or was it Thursday?
Yeah, no, Friday.
When they played on Friday and Russell kind of started slowly, the Lakers started slowly.
Right.
And tonight when he, you know, focused more on getting himself going and played a little bit more comfortably, the Lakers looked a lot more comfortable out there. So I think the Lakers are going to go as he goes. And if you combine, you know, him not necessarily playing as badly as people say that he played last year with the natural step forward that sophomores take, and then just not having to play with the guy that, you know, not playing with Kobe and not playing for the right. last guy. I think he's going to take a big step forward this year. And I'm really excited for the kid because I think he deserves some positive headlines.
So here's the thing about his game, you know, compared to Moutier. Moutier's not a threat to score, you know, at every moment when he has the ball in his hands. If he gets to turn a corner off of a pick and roll, then he's very dangerous. If he gets into the teeth of the defense, into the paint, he's very dangerous. He can collapse and kick out. D'Angelo Russell's kind of a threat to score every time he has the ball in his hands. So it makes it so hard to guard because he can pull up from the behind the three-point line, or he could take one step inside and pull up, or he can get past you and into the paint, and he has that nice floater and nice touch. So he's kind of – that's what makes him so tricky to defend, is that you're kind of always in – when you're defending him, you have to always be ready for that shot to go up.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what you kind of see right now. He has incredible feel in the pick and roll, but as soon as he turns the corner, the entire team has to realize, okay, he's about ready to score buckets. That's a valuable tool.
Well, we talked a lot during the finals. You know, you thought to a certain extent that Steph Curry deserved, was it MVP last year or this year, that you still thought?
Well, I thought last year, and then through like three games of the finals, I thought Steph Curry, I didn't think he deserved like the MVP, but I thought he was, people were being really hard on him because he only had 20 points or 23 points, you know, per game. But yeah, when the entire team is worried about him shooting at any moment, even if he doesn't score or get the assist, if his team scores because everyone's keyed in on him, that's very valuable.
Right. And I mean, I don't know if you talk about gravity a lot with your listeners, but Harrison and I don't really bring it up very much, but yeah, I mean, that's what it is. It's the perfect term out there, that people are just kind of pulled to that kind of offensive threat.
And everybody, not just one. And here's one thing I'll say, because D'Angelo didn't really have a great game in the first outing for the Lakers, right? No. The first game.
Mm-hmm.
And then he had two monster games against the Nuggets. And here's one thing I'll say. The Nuggets have added this, I don't understand it. I can't wait to ask Coach Malone at practice tomorrow a little bit about it. But they're dropping their bigs so far on the pick and roll
that so much space.
If you can draw up a way for D'Angelo Russell to get points, or any shooter that can shoot off the dribble, if you could draw it up, that's how you would do it. You would just sink your bigs because it left him wide open to operate. I don't know what the Nuggets are thinking. He had 21 points in the first game, and I went back and watched the film. 12 of the points came on Emmanuel Mudiay, Yusuf Nurkic pick and rolls. Mm-hmm. Where they just put him in it, and he just kind of walked into open space and shot. So,
is it a foot speed thing, do you think, with Nurkic?
Nurkic is so quick. I mean, he's kind of like Andre Drummond in that he's a really weird athlete. He's huge, he's enormous in size and strength, but he's really, really nimble, like weirdly nimble. Mm-hmm. I've seen Nurkic contain, you know, the pick and roll when he shows. That's what I think he should be doing. He should be walking up to the three-point line, not to guard the three-point line, but just to make sure that D'Angelo doesn't get a pull-up three, and then immediately retreating into the paint once Moutier recovers. That's not what he's doing. Instead, he's zoning up, and obviously it didn't work because D'Angelo had – what did he have tonight? 33
on – what was it? 33 points on 19 shots.
Yeah. So he had – and then he had – I think he only had like one or two assists, but he actually had a handful of – drop-offs to Mozgov, who just blew the dunk or blew the layup or what have you. So he really worked that pick and roll incredibly, and I think he deserves a ton of credit because he's confident in his skill, and he really did a great job of it. But I just don't understand what the Nuggets were doing with their pick and roll coverage. When do you guys play again next? When do the Lakers play next?
Man, you're putting me on the spot. I think let me find it. They play.
I'm just curious to see how he does in that game. I'm going to be following it really closely because.
You think it was a product or just poor scheme?
I think it's both. Look, I'm raving about D'Angelo because I think I was so impressed with just how he ran the pick and roll.
Mm-hmm.
But I do wonder if just a little bit better containment on pick and roll will make things harder, and Maybe he doesn't score 33. Maybe he scores 20 or so. Right. You know?
So let's see. So they play again on Tuesday. They play Portland again. Or not.
And Portland's an interesting one because Stotts' teams now for 4 years or 3 years, however long it's been, plays a really, really – they play a strong, contained pick-and-roll scheme as well. So I actually could see him going off in that one as well. Their bigs always drop on pick-and-roll coverage as well. So if you're a DFS player – I don't know if they have DFS for preseason, but preseason DFS, you got to – you got to get turned
if you
flat
have gambling there. Problems.
No.
No, but no, I do think. Well, it's kind of funny because you mentioned Nurkic is you know quickness and his agility, especially for that size. But Ed Davis is actually pretty agile.
Oh, I love Ed Davis. I love Ed Davis this year too.
It's kind of weird that they would play so like if they go about. You know, containing D'Angelo with the same kind of coverage as Denver does, it doesn't make very much sense to me because
I'll say this. Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum are much better at fighting over screens than Emmanuel Mudiay was. I think part of this, again, I'm not picking on Nurk or Mudiay here. I think it was kind of a schematic thing that the Nuggets are trying out that didn't make sense. But I think, you know, Mudiay really got hung up on screens a lot. It took him forever to recover. Kind of Nurkic was kind of sitting there for like 2 seconds trying to contain it. Or trying to zone up, which is too long. But then the other thing is they don't sink nearly as far as Gallo or as Nurkic did. Nurkic was sinking like kind of like the Spurs were playing LeBron in the finals 3 years ago. He was like sinking like 8 feet off of him.
Mm-hmm.
But this is D'Angelo Russell. He can shoot.
Right. And he's not nearly the threat LeBron is in the key. Like it didn't make.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So let's move on, though, because Nurkic – his counting stats were through the roof, 21 points, 16 rebounds. He had a double-double in the night on Friday night as well. What do you think of his game, and what did you think watching him?
Well, the first thing that jumps out at you is just how big he is. You know, like,
he's a big boy.
He was – Mozgov is no – you know, he's not skinny out there. He's not – and Nurkic was pretty easily getting position on even Mozgov. And Mozgov, not only is Mozgov not small, but he's, you know, he's pretty well known as at least a decent post defender, right? And and Nurkic was just kind of, I wouldn't say having his way with him, but if Nurkic really wanted position and he really worked for position, then it was just kind of his position. And then when the Lakers went small out there, that's when you guys started going on, you know, little mini runs. The Lakers tried to go a little small, and then just the rebound battle just became almost unfair because Nurkic was able to get in there and kind of body up people whenever he wanted, and that's kind of where the counting stats came from. The other thing that stood out to me, I don't know if I was willing to, I wasn't really keeping my eye out for his actual quickness and agility, but I thought he hand checked really well. And that's not me being, you know, like how dare the refs let him hand check? But I thought he really used his size in those you know situations where he would switch out onto a guard, because if the you know the one thing that bigs have the advantage on when they get into that switch is their length, and you know my frustration when I see that switch happen is they crouch down and they try to play more like a guard, where I'm just saying, actually, try using your length. If you get called for a hand check or something like that, you get called for a hand check. And right. Nurkic, you know, I thought he used his hips really well in terms, you know, to keep people in front. And that takes great footwork to be able to do that. And then the angles that he took to contest those situations at the rim were really good. And yeah, when you talk, you know, you were wondering about their schematic, you know, what they were their strategy in defending the pick and roll. With how effective he was at keeping people in front of him, it makes even less sense what they were trying to do.
And that's exactly the point. Like I'm actually not critiquing Nurkic when I say this. I'm actually giving him credit. He's better than what I think Malone is trusting him to do. Mm-hmm. Because he does move his feet so well. So I would love to see him, you know, have to guard that pick and roll a little bit more actively. you mentioned the rebounds. The Nuggets out-rebounded the Lakers tonight 54-29, which is just a massive – and part of that was they shot a lot worse, but that's still a massive dominance on the glass. 16 for Nurkic, and to your point about his size, you don't move him off. You talked about Mozgov had a hard time moving it off. He didn't move him off the block. Mm-hmm. If Nurkic gets that spot, then it's his. It's just you forfeit that spot, and that's one of the things that I think offensively for him to grow as a player – I think he needs to be more like Drummond, where when he rolls to the rim, he needs to roll hard to anchor himself on the block for offensive rebounds. A little bit less for you know, catching the ball on lobs or drop offs and stuff to finish, because he's not that great of a finisher. But if he can just roll to that block and own that spot, you can't push him off. He's almost guaranteed the offensive rebound, you know, or at least he's guaranteed to anchor right there. So that's what I'd like to see him do. That's how I'd like to see him evolve his game a little bit more offensively.
Well, quick question about Nurkic. How was he last year in terms of foul trouble? Like, was he – I mean, he spent a lot of time kind of hurt or dinged up a little bit, as I remember last year. But in terms – when he was healthy, how did he deal with foul stuff?
It's the exact same. I think his rookie season, he averaged 6.6 fouls per 36 minutes. And then last year, it was 6 fouls per 36 minutes. So it's pretty much the same, minor improvement, mm-hmm. and that's going to be a big issue for him too. And that might be why Malone is making him play such a conservative pick and roll defense, is because he's just trying to keep him out of foul trouble. But the thing is, his fouls are not coming on pick and roll defense. His fouls are coming on the offensive end in transition, and just really, and then thirdly, would be really, really stupid fouls that are just kind of like he had one today, 90 feet from the basket, for no reason. So I think if you broke down his fouls by what type they were, very, very few of them are coming in pick and roll situations or even in half court situations.
Right. Yeah. And that's that's the worst part. I remember when Shaq used to pick up a foul on the other end of the court, and I remember just sitting there like, dude, you know,
just cut this out.
What's even the point of that? Now, sometimes Shaq would even say that some of the points of that was just to kind of give himself a break, you know, from running up and down the court, because Nurkic is a big dude.
Yeah.
You know, and Shaq obviously was a giant. And so to a certain extent, and I think sometimes you see those fouls with like Boogie that are, you know, you kind of scratch your head like, what are you doing there? And I think it's more of like, honestly, I really need to catch my breath right now. And
I think that's a big part of it with him too, by the way. I mean, he's just a big boy. I think sometimes he gets winded and makes worse decisions.
Right. And so I think, I think if I'm Malone and I'm hoping that Nurkic can play, you know, what do you think he'll play? 25 to 30 minutes a game? Not much more than 30, right?
So here, I'm going to have to go. This is a loaded question for me, and I want to get into it.
Uh-huh.
So first of all, you know, I've critiqued Nurkic a little bit over the last couple weeks, and any type of critique for the team that you're writing about just is perceived as a complete slight. So Nuggets fans are kind of like, there's a segment of Nuggets fans I think that have now labeled me a Nurkic hater, which is just absurd. He's probably like my fourth or fifth favorite Nugget on this team. I mean, he's a top prospect at the center position, one of the top prospects.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things about him is that worries me is that he's a guy. There's two types of players, I think, offensive players. There's guys that shots just find them, or that find shots. The ball's always in their hands, so they're always putting up field goal attempts. And then there's guys that find shots when the offense is running properly. Then they're in the right spot for the right types of shots. Nurkic, when he's on the court, is getting shots. Sometimes to the detriment of other players, meaning like, You run a set and it just ends up in his hand because he's always in the spot where the ball's going to finish. And that's not necessarily a good thing. This can be a bad thing. There's a lot of high volume scorers that this is what happens, but the team is worse for it. Now,
I rooted for Kobe for 20 years.
Yeah, exactly. Kobe, you never watch Kobe and like, man, Kobe's really hidden out there. You know, haven't heard from Kobe for a while. Like, that never happened.
Right.
When he's on the court, the ball is just there. And I think this is kind of one of the big differences between Nurkic and Jokic, is that Jokic is, when the offense is humming, the ball is finding him, and he's making plays and this and that. When the offense is not humming, he can be hidden, and you can be like, well, where's Jokic? What happened? You know, we haven't heard his name for a while. Nurkic, when he's on the court, is the ball is always in his hands. And so the thing I worry about is I'm really curious to see how Malone handles that dynamic, because too much Nurkic. I'm gonna mess up this this metaphor. Gosh dang it! I was gonna say too much Nurkic spoils the offense.
Okay.
Do you know what is the little saying I'm trying to think? Too much sugar spoils the dinner.
No,
I don't know.
No idea where you're going. I was gonna, honestly the for a good portion of the time we've been having this conversation, I was thinking to myself like. They're really pro Nurkic people. Like, are they called nerd kitches? Or is that?
Oh my gosh! Oh my god! I forgot to introduce you as like the worst pun maker on the internet. Not just on Twitter, but on the internet.
I couldn't help myself. I'm sorry. So easy.
So anyway, you asked about minutes. I think his right minutes would probably be around 22 minutes a game. That's what I think he's probably going to be best at. But. I do wonder if he's going to be a guy that Malone kind of leans on more and more and more as the season goes on and he's up into the 30 minutes a game. I think that would be a mistake. If it were me, I'd be playing Jokic probably 30 minutes and Nurkic about 22 and then probably playing 4 or 5 minutes in a small ball lineup with somebody like Darrell Arthur or Fareed at center. But but we'll see.
Yeah, it's tough with him because it's so – like the typical thinking with somebody like him is like, yeah, he looks like such an efficient scorer because he's so big and he's so easy to get close to the rim. But yeah, I mean, sometimes you fall into that, you fall into the trap of that looks really easy and you're going for two pointers where you probably should be trying for the corner three a little bit more. And the one criticism I think I have of him, and I might be completely off base because I haven't watched very much of him, but he's not the greatest at passing out of the double team from what I've seen.
He's a really good passer in like controlled settings, I think. Like he's really good at passing from the elbows. But like you said, sometimes he gets sped up. What did he have today? He had three turnovers, not horrible, but he had a handful of just kind of silly forced turnovers today. Yeah. So
I'd like
a guy that has 21 points on 10 shots tonight. Like he had a really, really efficient night tonight. 9 of 12 from the free throw line. So
I do like him, and you know, especially if he is agile enough to really, because that's the one concern you have with bigs like Nurkic is can they keep up with the pick and roll pace and space kind of play? My only thing is if he finds himself consistently sped up in those double team situations where he can't find, if not the assist, the actual assist, but the hockey assist that leads to the guy in the, you know, being open in the corner. That's when you start to worry a little bit about a big. But he's really young, right? Like he's only in his third year.
Yeah, oh no, he's super young. He has and not only that, he was injured part of his first year. He was injured a big part of his second year, so he doesn't have a lot of mileage on him to begin with. But let's keep it moving. Let's talk about your guy, Julius Randle, and we can talk about Larry Nance as well, kind of pair them together.
That's the popular thing out here.
A pair of those guys. We talked a little bit briefly, so I kind of know which way you lean on this, but I'll say this. A lot of the smartest people are people whose opinions I respect the most, you know, guys that work in front offices, some of my favorite writers, are really low on Julius Randle and just kind of feel he has an overrated skill set or what have you. This is an instance where I'm actually a little bit opposite of a lot of the people that I agree with most of the time in that I like his skill set a lot. It's not a perfect skill set, and he has a few things that are probably overrated, but I think he has such a unique skill set that he can be used properly. And I think Luke Walton is going to figure out how to use him properly, and he's going to have a very good year, especially towards the end of the year. I think he's going to really turn some heads. Tonight, I thought actually in both Friday and this game, I thought he looked really, really great in times running the break, kind of showing off his handle in the open court. And then he went up against Nurkic, who probably has him by 60 pounds and like didn't back down. He posted him up a few times.
He's strong as an ox. Like, that's the one thing.
Randle is.
Yeah. It's kind of funny. You kind of watch him play up against, you know, some of the vets, especially, I mean, obviously in his actual rookie year, he played 14 minutes and broke his shin. But in his second year, he would go up against, you know, vets, big vets, you know, the Zach Randolphs, the, you know, the Boogies or whatever. And he would just throw himself in there, throw his body around, utilize his strength. And you kind of, I mean, especially if you're really watching, sometimes they'll pan to the guy who just, you know, committed the foul. and you'll kind of get that look on their face like, oh boy, yeah. I did not anticipate that kind of physicality. And I saw that throughout the year from Randall. And tonight was another example where Nurkic, like you said, or like we've talked about, is really big. And Randall would just kind of, you know, he'd seal him or whatever. Last night was, not last night, they played the Kings before they played the Nuggets, which I think was like on a Wednesday or something. Mm. And poor Omri Caspi was charged with defending Randall in the post.
Oh, jeez.
And Randall, like, he wound up getting an offensive foul, but I think it was almost on accident. You know, like, mm-hmm. he just felt a fly on him, and he just kind of, like, waved his arms out, and there went Omri Caspi. And it was just because he's just that physical of a dude. And I want to agree with you. My concern with Randall is he tends to over-dribble by a dribble or two consistently, and I'd like to see him fix that.
Yeah. My concern actually with both of them is just that they're not that great of rebounders. Mm-hmm. I mean, Randall, I guess, is probably a better rebounder by quite a wide margin. But Larry Nance, let me see. What did he have tonight? One rebound in 17 minutes. That's a lot of time to be on the floor to collect one rebound, especially at his size and athleticism. Mm-hmm. Here's what I'd say about the two. Randall's a guy that has a ton of skills, but not all of them are useful. Nance is a guy that has like two skills, but they're both useful. And sometimes it's almost good to have that because it's more focused. Kenneth Faried's this way a little bit. Kenneth Faried doesn't have a ton of skills, but he does a couple things really well. And if you can set things up for him so that that's all he has to do, he's very effective. It's when he's forced to do other things that you know, there can be problems. But yeah. I really like Randall, though. He's not like my number one choice to have a breakout year by any means or anything like that. But if you were to ask me, you know, is he going to have a positive, you know, positive growing, you know, his stock going to be rising this year or falling? I'm going to say it's going to be rising this year.
Yeah, no, that's, I think that's kind of the case with all the Lakers because it was so toxic last season. Yeah,
it is true. The more I watch basketball, the more I realize that's how it is, though. You know, like, you realize the environments really affect the people's performance and development. And that stuff matters. The coach matters. The teammates matter.
I mean, just look at Boogie. Like, I'm still waiting for him to be in a non-toxic situation, right? I feel bad for the guy. And there's so many hot takes about Boogie, about, you know, he's not going to get you here. He's not going to do this. He's not going to do that. He's always angry at referees and stuff. If I was Boogie, I'd be angry at everybody.
He's gonna look really good on the Warriors here in a year or so.
I was gonna say he's gonna look great as a Laker when they flip. But that's like everybody in the league. Everybody's gonna look great as a Laker.
That's true. Gosh, Laker fans really are the worst. I have no problem saying that whatsoever. They're easily the worst fan base in all of basketball.
Hey, at least our team. And is
I say that as somebody. I say that as somebody that lived in LA for 2 years, and loved LA, loved it. Laker fans were the worst, though.
I relish in the title. I really do. I'm the guy who will sarcastically just post, you know, Kobe better. Even if it's like baseball.
All right.
what I was going to ask you actually with Randall was you mentioned how he has all the, you know, the skills. Like he's a good passer. You worry about his rebounding, but defensively for me is where I'm concerned because his arms aren't very long. His feet are really active on offense, but defensively his feet aren't all that active and his instincts aren't all that great. I had mentioned to you that I think Nance fits better with the starting unit because he doesn't need the ball as much to be successful compared to Randall. Mm-hmm. Am I overthinking that, or, you know, do you just want the most talented with that unit as possible, or would you ride with the theory?
Again, I don't think that stuff matters. There's just differences, but not necessarily one's better. It's about how you can use those differences. Mm-hmm. So one of the things I would say is, you know, obviously Julius Randle gets a lot of comparisons to Draymond Green, which I think on one side of the ball, it's actually an okay comparison. On offense, I think it's an okay comparison. On defense, it's not even close. But
laughable.
Yeah, but offensively, I wonder if Luke Walton will use the 1-4 pick and roll a little bit specifically to get Draymond running downhill, or Draymond to get Julius running downhill,
Freudian slip,
and things like that. And that's kind of the stuff I think watching him, I'm thinking, you know what? He's a guy that at the power forward position can kind of push the offense and can kind of be like the go-to point for short stretches. Obviously, D'Angelo's your guy, but for short stretches, he can kind of run the offense from the power forward position, and that's just a powerful tool. But as you mentioned, this wasn't a defensive series, but the Friday game and this one, it was 124-115 tonight. That's a track meet. Even by preseason standards, that's a track meet and a pretty sloppy defensive game.
And it wasn't even in Denver. Like, usually you think of those games, like those scores are like going on in Denver.
Yeah, no, this was Ontario. which, by the way, Ontario, I'm just insulting LA left and right, but Ontario's like, why do people live there? It's like an hour and a half from the ocean. You know, it's hot. It's like a suburb. It's just like a giant suburb.
I think it's mostly because you can buy land for like a stake. You can buy land for like $5 an acre.
Because nobody wants it. Exactly. Yeah. There you go. So let's move on here to the last one, I think, unless you have somebody else. But I wanted to ask about Jamal Murray. Mm-hmm. I thought he had a really good Friday, albeit it came mostly in garbage time against the Lakers' third string. But what did you think from him over the last two games?
The thing that I noticed the most with him, and it's kind of generic because you think about this with all scorers, right, is that he's just really good at creating angles to get a shot off. Like, yeah. I was watching this with Lou, and Lou Williams is like really is, you know, everybody knows, you know, the thing with Lou is he's going to draw fouls, but right. On plays where he doesn't draw it, like he kind of steps back, you know, at awkward positions to create a little bit of space for himself. And Jamal is taller. He's 6'4" compared to Lou, I think, who's like 6'2" ish.
Yeah.
But Jamal, the thing I like the most about him is just, yeah, I mean, he's just really good at creating space for himself. And that's my concern with guys like who was the guy that was it the Wolves drafted? No, the Pelicans drafted. Who's their top pick this year?
Buddy Hield.
Buddy Hield, yeah. When I watched him play in Vegas, he was never able to create space for himself. When he was taking shots, it was always highly contested. And Jamal, you just kind of look at him and you know, you kind of blink and whoop, he has a, you know, a 6 inches to a foot more space than you anticipate. And that in and of itself is a huge skill for him. Now, the issue with him is I don't know necessarily what role he's going to play on the Nuggets, because you already have Will Barton,
who is... Yeah, he's the sixth man, high volume, come in and score, get buckets up, yeah.
Yeah, what's Simmons' term for it? The guy...
Irrational confidence?
Yeah, irrational confidence guy. Like, Will Barton is that guy for the Nuggets. So I don't know necessarily if there's too much space for Jamal Murray to step in and do that as much. But, you know, if you're dying for offense and Barton just doesn't really have it going, it's nice to have another guy that you can kind of look at and say, all right, go out there and shoot 4 or 5 times. Let's see what happens.
The thing I take away from Jamal Murray so far through 3 preseason games is that he belongs in the NBA right now. Mm-hmm. Like, I watch Malik Beasley and Juan Hernan Gomez, and they have moments and they look good from stretches, but they kind of look like the NBA level is a level ahead of them. Mm-hmm. Like, by the end of the year, they'll probably be acclimated. Jamal Murray, I think, is already ready for the NBA, albeit probably in more of like a 10 to 15 minute per game role. But I think he can go out there and fit in just fine. And so I do think he'll be a big part of the rotation. Not a big part. I do think he'll be a part of the rotation to start the season.
He's only 19. Like, if you're able to say that about a 19-year-old, then, you know, that's a damn good draft pick.
Oh yeah, the learning curve for 19-year-olds is just through the roof. So I'm really impressed with Jamal Murray. I like him more every single day, every single minute he's on the court. He shows me something new, and so I'm pretty excited for him. He does have his flaws defensively. You know, I think he has his ups and downs, but offensively, he is a guy that can just get buckets. And like you said, he can get his shot off, which is he doesn't create a ton of space, but he doesn't need a ton of space to get a look and to make his shot. So
right. Well, I think for guys like this kind of goes unnoticed with smaller scorers, is that they're used to scoring up, you know, against, you know, longer defenders, better athletes, right. Whatever. Yeah. And he's just another example of somebody who's accustomed to doing that kind of thing. And when you go to the NBA, like the thing I look for in draft picks, especially, you know, high ceiling guys, is, all right, what can they do when they get to the NBA? Like, is there one thing that they can just lean on at any moment? And right. for him, it's, I can get my shot off, you right. know, and I can, I not only can I get my shot off, but, you know, 6-7 times out of 10, it's going to be a pretty good look. And, you know, like you mentioned, Hernan Gomez, I watched him tonight, and I had cause I knew I was going to talk to you, and I knew you're a big fan of what's his name? Juancho out there.
Juancho
Villa. But he, I watch him, and I'm not positive what he's really going to lean on in the NBA. You know, to the same extent that Murray is.
9 rebounds. I mean, he's a guy that's just like an incredible rebounder. I think that'll be a big part of his calling. But you're right. I mean, with both Juancho and Malik, they're guys that it's going to take a full year to kind of see where they are, how they grow, what their skill sets are, because they're not dominant in any one skill that you say, oh, he can make a living doing that in the NBA. But I do like him. I'm still very high on him, and 13 points, 9 rebounds, almost a double double in 25 minutes. I thought it was pretty good.
Mm-hmm. I guess for the most part I liked what I saw, but I watched him, especially on offense, and I guess I pay a lot more attention to guys, especially because like I'm there to watch the Lakers more than anybody.
Right.
And you know, when I watched him trying to create shots for himself, I just didn't see the same kind of space that you would like to see. Now he's longer, so he doesn't need as much space, nearly as much space. He's so tall. Yeah. But yeah, I like to see a little bit more space for him.
Yeah, let's move on to the last guy here, Brandon Ingram, because he's such an interesting one. And before we even get into the thoughts, what's the pulse in Lakerland? Because I know everybody likes to give hot takes and panic or exaggerate things after preseason, but what are people thinking of Brandon Ingram? He had 4 points tonight, 2 rebounds. What's the pulse out there in Lakerland?
Well, the other night the pulse was that how dare the Lakers give him Kobe's locker, which was I found that funny on Twitter. I couldn't help but laugh because like if they don't,
they're gonna
give...
retire a locker. Yeah, I know. Locker forever.
What's hilarious, and so they give Ingram Kobe's actual locker, and then they gave Ivica Zubac Kobe's suit locker. Like Kobe had two.
Oh my god, he had a different locker.
He had a separate locker for his suits.
Oh my gosh.
Anywho,
oh my
so
goodness.
I found that pretty hilarious. But like, what I was the point I was making on Twitter and. You know, it, on one hand, it's like, how can this not be a story? And I think it's a cool one, but I don't necessarily think it's anything to freak out about. But like, if they don't give the locker to Ingram or to Russell or to Clarkson or to Randall, right? If they don't give Kobe's locker to any of those guys, the headlines are, oh, the Lakers don't see any of the kids as, you know, worthy of Kobe's footprint, you know, or whatever, you know.
Have you been in the Lakers locker room?
What's that?
Have you been in inside the Lakers locker room?
No, I'm banned. The Lakers don't like me very much.
Oh, I can see why. No, but is Kobe's locker different than every other locker? I mean, is it just positioned in a certain place, or is it an actual like difference? Like it's a walk-in closet or something.
From what I've heard, it's like a corner spot. You know, it's like the...
That's a corner lot.
Right,
yeah. It's like real estate transaction.
Exactly. It's like the cul-de-sac that everybody hopes to own at some point.
It's walking distance to the grocery store. It's phenomenal. Yeah, no traffic.
Yeah, Ubers drive right by it all the time.
So this is silly because, honestly, man, somebody has to have... Like the Nuggets locker room, you know, it's a circle. And there's just lockers everywhere. And anybody could have any locker, basically. So this idea that there's one locker that's more important than any other locker in there is just absurd. It's a circle.
I love Matt. Like Matt Moore is among the nicest people that you'll ever meet. He's great. He's done great things for all kinds of careers out there. And he and I just happen to disagree on this. And it's like, I want to know if Ben Simmons has Allen Iverson's locker. You know, I want to know if Marcus Smart has Bob Cousy's locker.
Jeez.
You know,
the Celtics have, now you know how many jerseys they retire. There'd be no locker room space. The entire team would be sharing two lockers because that's the only lockers that aren't retired if they retired lockers.
Yeah, did Paul Pierce have Larry Bird's locker? And then after Paul Pierce, did like Al Horford inherit Garnett's? I don't know. But the thing with Ingram out here is, and this is something I actually credit Laker fans with, and it's kind of a circumstantial thing because with Russell, there was a lot of debate. Should they go with Okafor? Should they go with Russell? Should they go with, you know, and a lot of people out here just flat out thought that the Lakers were going to draft Russell because he's a center and the Lakers historically have always had this center guy. And they go with Russell. And, you know, a lot of the hot takery was, oh, well, you know, look at what Russell's doing out there in Philly, to which I said he's not really doing much. And nowadays, you know, it was Simmons who was the, you know, easy number one pick that everybody wanted. And then it was Ingram was the easy number two pick. And then from there, just kind of everybody right. else kind of fell by the wayside. So Ingram slid into an easy situation as is. And then on top of that, they signed the Wall Dang, which eases pressure off of Ingram even further because he doesn't have to step in and be the, you know, carry this mantle of I have to be the face of the franchise right away, or I have to start right away, or if I'm not rookie of the year or in rookie of the year consideration, I'm seen as a bust. So I think the Lakers have set him up for some success, with the exception of, you know, there's a lot of Kevin Durant, you know, buzz, and
right.
they're comparing him to Kevin Durant, to which I say, let's pump the brakes a bit. Kevin Durant is probably the best scorer I've ever seen in my life.
Kevin Durant was really skinny when he came in as a 19-year-old to Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
He was nowhere near as weak as Brandon Ingram is. And let me say this: I really, really like Brandon Ingram. I think he's going to be a player. I think he's going to be good.
Uh-huh.
I think it's going to take 3 years before you start to see that. You know, one full year of just kind of a lot of bench minutes, a lot of like really, really bad numbers, a second year where there's like signs of promise and this and that, and a third year where he actually starts to become a player and people start to realize. But he is maybe the weakest player I've ever seen in the NBA, like physically weakest. Some of the takes he had today where he would get fouled, but had like, it's funny because he actually finished an and one on kind of a trick shot. That was actually pretty impressive. But he had so many other ones where he took it to the hole and just, like, had no chance of getting the shot off because a guy would just, like, easily hold his arm and he had no hope of escaping it.
Yeah. He tried to dunk on Boogie the other night, which was pretty funny.
Oh, my God.
I found
the strength difference between those two. But look at – so let's go – Kevin Durant's rookie season. I know you don't like the comp, but obviously it's the best comp just because they're so – their bodies are so
they
similar.
They look so similar.
Shooter.
Yeah.
But – Kevin Durant, first season, 28%, 29% three-point shooter. His very next year, 42. That's just such a huge leap. And then he was kind of in that upper 30s the rest of his career, or 40s the rest of his career.
Mm-hmm.
But that first year, 29%. I think with Ingram, I think you're going to see the exact same thing. He's going to shoot bad percentages, especially – I mean, his three-point percentage might be as good as his two-point percentage because he's just so weak inside that it's so hard for him to finish anything. But I think you're going to see numbers like that. But I'm really high, so I'm saying all these bad things about him. I'm really high on him. I think he's good at the stuff that is hardest to learn.
Yeah.
And the stuff that's easiest to learn, like putting on strength, is probably the easiest thing to do in the NBA because that's all your job is. You have a training staff who's just there to like give you protein shakes and make you do push-ups. So like I think that part is going to come to him. But his fluidity, his ball handling skills, his shot. His footwork, that stuff's already there.
I made the comparison tonight, and again, different players altogether, but his release reminds me of Dirk. He has a pretty high release. It's kind of slow. It's kind of, you know, it takes him a while to get the ball off, but because he's so tall and because he releases the ball from so high, I don't think it necessarily matters as much. Now, Dirk was... light years ahead of him in terms of like shooting and all of those things. Dirk's really freaking good, obviously. But I watched him shoot tonight, and guys kind of close out to him quickly, and I think like he hasn't shot the ball very well at all in the preseason. It's been kind of a story out here.
No.
And I think to a large extent it's because he's not ready for NBA speed. Like NBA game speed, I mean you know this.
Yeah.
It's insane. Like those guys are just they're superhuman out there and for him he's another 19, 20 year old and I just don't think he's quite ready yet for that. And I don't think it's necessarily a knock on him. Who is ready for that at 19 or 20?
And especially him. Some guys are a little bit more physical, but he's 3 for 15 on the season so far and 3 preseason games. So I think he'll have a really, really, really bad year by every statistical measure. But if I was a Laker fan, I just would probably chalk that one up right now and just say it's going to be a long, slow process. But his upside is just so high. You don't see guys with his height and his skill set too often. So I think it'll come.
And that's why they signed Deng. You know,
right.
I think they kind of knew what they were getting into with Ingram, and then eventually when they're the you know the great 3-4 combo that they can possibly be, then the Lakers can use the hashtag Dengram.
Okay,
and make that.
Yeah, you guys can use that one if you like. That's about it. I think we touched on most of the young guys. Jordan Clarkson, we didn't, but we kind of talked beforehand. It was. He didn't really stick out, I don't think, too much. And plus, his game's a little bit more known now with him being in the league for a little bit longer. So we'll kind of gloss over him. But yeah, a lot of young talent on this Nugget or on these two teams. And with the Moutier and D'Angelo kind of built-in rivalry, I think it'll be fun to kind of watch these guys go back and forth, hopefully for years and years to come.
Well, I like the Moutier D'Angelo, you know, pseudo rivalry, and I like the Gary Harris Jordan Clarkson rivalry. Like those guys kind of go at each other a little bit too. Like they enjoy playing against each other, and that's fun to watch as well.
Yeah, that'll be good. That'll be a good backcourt rivalry for years and years to come. Hopefully for years and years to come. So, Anthony, anything else you want to plug before you go?
Just at Locked On Lakers. Just follow the show and tune into that stuff. Harrison and I record daily, and we find you know weird ways to talk about the stuff and. Yeah, I'm at Anthony Irwin LA. If you loved all the puns that I talked about tonight, make sure you follow me on Twitter.
He is a very punny guy. Yeah. Anthony, thanks so much, man, for joining me.
It was fun. I enjoy talking to you all the time. Adam, let's do this a little more often.
Sounds good.